Good evening. You can be opening your Bibles to the book of Proverbs if you want to follow along with some of the passages we're going to be looking at, although they'll all be on the PowerPoint tonight. That song that we just sang about being more like Jesus is the reason why we come together. Part of the song that we just sang talked about how we long to give him glory in righteousness and praise. And I suppose that in any given local church, any given subculture of Christians, depending on what part of the country you live in, there might be some people that emphasize one of those things to the neglect of the other. There might be people that emphasize righteousness and righteousness, but don't talk about how good God has been to them very much. And then there might be other people that talk about how good God is and how great God is, but they don't really concern themselves much with doing what he's actually said. And this time that we spend together tonight, the goal of this is to help us to become more like Jesus, that we would act like him, righteousness, and that we would be people that give him the praise and the credit that he deserves. And when you look at the life of Jesus, there's so many things that Jesus said that sounds a lot like the book of Proverbs. When Jesus was growing up, going to Sabbath school and learning the Old Testament, not that they called it the Old Testament at that time. He was studying things like the Psalms, like Proverbs, and you can see echoes of those kinds of things coming out in the teaching that he would give. And so I want us to do something a little bit different tonight and look at a particular theme in the book of Proverbs. But maybe to set this up, when I was growing up, my family would play different board games and card games. And one of the ones that we played, not very much because it was only fun for like 10 minutes, was a game called Would You Rather or Pick Your Poison, where you'd have these cards that would give you these two different scenarios, and it was fun to discuss which of those two you would have preferred. And so you'd get really lame situations like, would you rather speak like Yoda whenever you're nervous or be only able to speak in rhyme, like, all the time? Would you rather find a rat in your kitchen or a cockroach in your bed? Oh, that's an interesting conversation to have. These ideas of the would you rather kind of discussions. In the book of Proverbs, there are passages that use this better than scenario, where you're presented with two different options, and it's much more serious than that card game that's only fun for 10 minutes would be. And whenever Proverbs, or the book of Ecclesiastes does the same thing, but we're sticking in Proverbs in this lesson, it gives you these two scenarios, and if you're a shallow-minded, earthly kind of person, there's one of those things that you're going to be really attracted to. But if you're a spiritually minded person, there's going to be the other scenario, which is not the thing that most people that are earthly minded would want, but for the spiritually minded person, it's the situation that they would prefer. And I think these passages help us assess how spiritually focused am I? How much am I seeking after things that are truly valuable as opposed to things that are valuable in the eyes of the world? And I'm going to say at the beginning that these passages in Proverbs, they make it seem like it's either this or that. And that's the way that these Proverbs read. Is it possible, though, to be able to have the best of both worlds in such situations? Sure, that's possible at times. But what these passages, I think, are trying to get us to think about is there might be things in this world that you pursue, that I pursue it to the neglect of the thing that matters the most. And I think that's the thrust and the feeling that we're supposed to get from these kinds of Proverbs. Proverbs chapters 1 through 9 are giving you a series of arguments, 15 arguments if I remember correctly, 15 discourses on why wisdom is worth pursuing. And so in those first 9 chapters, you've got sections in Proverbs that span several paragraphs at times. And then beginning around chapter 10 of Proverbs, basically through the rest of the book with a couple exceptions to that, you get these really short sayings of wisdom. And in chapters 10 through 31, These are the passages in Proverbs that bring up this better than scenario, where one thing is better than another. The ones that I have highlighted in yellow are the ones that we're going to be looking at in this lesson. I don't know if anybody wants to take a snapshot of that and use that for further study on your own or something like that. But what I want to do is I want to filter out some of these Proverbs and look at it from these three perspectives. What are the better than Proverbs that deal with your moral life, the ones that deal with your family life, and the ones that deal with your social life? So like the book of Proverbs does, we're going to jump around and look at different ideas, but it's all under the overall idea of how spiritually minded are you? Which scenarios would you rather have if you had to pick one of the two? So with that in mind, let's get started here with the first set of Proverbs. In your moral life, one of the things that we see in these passages is you have the option of being patient or powerful. And again, you might have the best of both worlds, but there's a lot of people that pursue power to the neglect of being a patient person, a self-controlled person. And look at one of the Proverbs that brings this up. In Proverbs 16:32, whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. Imagine somebody so physically powerful and so charismatic that he could lead an army. So he's got big muscles, he's a strong person, and people look up to the way that he talks and the way that he can get all these people to do the things that he wants them to do. He's so wonderful in all these ways that he can go and storm a city and take it. I mean, in history, we remember people like Alexander the Great or the Spartan soldiers or Genghis Khan. And even though there might be things about these people that we know to be immoral, we're still impressed with how powerful these people are. So would you rather be somebody that's really powerful? Or, as it says in this passage, somebody who's slow to anger, somebody who's patient? I mean, that immediately sounds a lot more boring, doesn't it? Taking a city versus being somebody that's slow to anger. You're not going to be remembered in the history books. Nobody's going to applaud you. Nobody's going to be really impressed with you. You're going to be forgotten much sooner than anybody else. But I think what this is saying is that to be able to rule yourself, rather than having power over everybody else, having power over yourself involves more wisdom. It involves more strength. It involves more spirituality. If somebody says something really offensive to you, is it more impressive to dig at them and get a really good comeback to them, or is it more impressive to bite your tongue? Would you rather be somebody that's really powerful or somebody where every time you're tempted to watch porn, you refuse to watch it? Would you rather be somebody who's really powerful or the kind of person who every time one of your kids gets on your nerves, you have the ability to control your anger towards them? You know, throughout history, a lot of the people that have had a lot of power over people, if you read about their individual moral life, a lot of these people were involved in sexual immorality. They had all kinds of anger issues that history books will write about. Which of these would you rather have? Power over others or power over yourself? Now, that's just the first one for your moral life, but notice another one. Would you rather have righteousness or riches? And by the way, before we look at some of the Proverbs that deal with this, this is the theme in Proverbs for the better than passages. This is the kind of proverb that's used more than any other, is righteousness or riches. I'm going to show you two of those examples. And I'll also remind us that the one who's writing this book is Solomon. Did he have both? He had both righteousness and riches, at least for a time he did. But I think when he brings up these passages, he's saying there's a lot of people that forsake their character in pursuit of wealth. And so look at some of these ones. Proverbs 16, verse 8, better is a little with righteousness than great revenues with injustice. Or Proverbs 28, verse 6, better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than a rich man who is crooked in his ways. I remember a time when I had moved to California. And there was another preacher at another church that I'd get together with from time to time. And he started talking about his experience as a preacher and dealing with certain people that boasted about the money that they had and couldn't talk about anything else except for their success and things like that. And he walked me through how he thought through why sometimes wicked people are the ones that end up with money. And he started out with this premise. Who is it that has money? People have money. And so if you want to get money from people, you oftentimes have to learn how to manipulate people. Now again, is that the only way people ever make money is learning how to... No, there's exceptions to this, and Proverbs knows this, but these Proverbs say what they're saying here. And so, therefore, there can sometimes be people that learn how to manipulate people, and they learn that by their injustices, by their unjust scales, by their unjust business practices, by things like this, that they can extract more and more and more money from people. You've seen this before in movies, where the movie opens up with some poor family and the husband doesn't have a good paying job, but they've got a little kid in diapers and the kid's crying and the dad's trying to figure out how to pay for everything. And then there comes this opportunity for him to do a shady dealing. And it's going to promise him a lot of money, but it gets him into a lot of trouble. You realize that there's a lot of people in this world that have made their wealth by unjust business practices, that have made their wealth by learning how to manipulate people, especially sometimes in sales and things like that. Can you think of wealthy people in the Bible or people that gained money by some kind of unrighteousness? Zacchaeus, remember when he says to Jesus that I'll repay fourfold if I've defrauded anybody? Judas received his money by unrighteousness. Have you ever tried to gain any money by unrighteousness? If you've ever used shady business dealings, manipulative sales tactics and things like that, do you feel really good about the money you made? What about a really small example? How about your kids are at a certain age where they no longer get the kid discount at such and such place? You ever lied about your kids' ages so that you could save a little bit? Did you feel pretty good about that? Whether it's a small thing or whether it's a big thing, passages like this, by the way, also show you that you can be a righteous person who's poor. Next time you have an opportunity to make money to the neglect of your character, which one are you going to defer to? And by the way, let me say this too, that as Christians, we should be more impressed with people who have honest jobs and maybe don't have as much money than really rich people that have done it by manipulative, unjust ways. I think about one day, Lord willing, when my kids get older, would I be more impressed with Asher or Elliot being a custodian, not making a whole lot of money, or being some unjust business person that makes a lot of money? I'd be far more happy if he was a poor custodian but taking care of his family the best he could. Notice then family life. Family life, you could have peace or you could have feasting. Again, if you can have both of them, that's great. But there are some people that pursue feasting to the neglect of having any peace in their home. Look at Proverbs 15, verse 17. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a fattened ox and hatred with it. Or Proverbs 17, verse 1. Better is a dry morsel with quiet than a house full of feasting with strife. Now imagine the best cut steak you could ever have. And not like, not the flat, wide ones, but the fat, tall kind of steak. You know what I'm talking about? At the really expensive restaurants. So you got like the best one with the best kind of butter that you could mix with it, the best dessert that you could ever have. And it's just like the finest food ever. But around the dinner table, it's tense. People don't really have the kind of happiness. The conversations are void with any kind of laughter and genuine love for one another. So there's that option, the really best food, but not the best family dynamic. Or the other option is you have herbs with a dry morsel. That sounds like a salad with croutons. So what would you, that, by the way, that's a vegetarian diet too. Would you rather live under the tyranny of a vegetarian diet, but with laughter around the table, or have the nicest food and all that sort of thing? I like this quote from Bruce Waltke, where he says, money can put food on the table, but not the fellowship around it. Money can buy a house, but not a home. Money can give a woman jewelry, but not the love she really wants. Do you suppose that there are some families that in pursuit of having nice things, after nice thing after nice thing. And the husband is working way more than he really needs to. And it's all in the name of, I want to give my kids what I never had. And all. Yeah, but you're also neglecting the family at some point. And you suppose every time you come home with all the nice food and all the fat and calf and everything, and your wife feels emotionally neglected, your kids feel like they don't even really know you very well, you think everybody's pretty happy about that? But really what's going on is, in the name of your idolatry, you just want more and more and more and more. But hey, I'm taking care of the family. That's the cover anyways. What would you rather have? How about another one that's kind of related to this, but different enough to still make it its own category? Loneliness or fighting? And I love these ones. Proverbs 21 verse 9, which is the same thing as Proverbs 25 verse 24. It is better to live in a corner of the rooftop than in a house shared with a quarrelsome wife. Or in Proverbs 21:19, it is better to live in a desert land than with a quarrelsome and fretful woman. As soon as these passages are put up on the board, you know, some people wonder, well, Solomon, why are you being so sexist? Why didn't you talk about living with a quarrelsome man? Because you could have a quarrelsome man as well. Until we have to remember this, that Solomon is addressing his sons throughout the book. If you look up the word sons, or where Solomon says something like, hear my son, or listen my sons, that phrase is used like 23 times in the book of Proverbs. So when Asher gets older and I'm trying to let him know and inform him the kind of woman to avoid, I'm not going to be gender neutral about that. I'm going to say to Asher, hey, Asher, make sure you avoid this kind of woman. I'm not going to say make sure you avoid this kind of man or woman, because I'm going to assume that he's not going to be a homosexual. So he's coming from the perspective where he's writing to his sons. So can you see why he would say avoid a quarrelsome woman? So therefore, you could interchange this in that kind of way. Imagine living in a really nice house. It's the most Pinteresting house you've ever seen. It's got all the things in it that you've ever wanted. Like, all the paintings are exactly where you want them to be. It's the designer couches. It's all of the really, really, really nice things. But your spouse is constantly bickering at you. He's telling you how to hold the broom. She's telling you how to do the dishes more effectively. He doesn't like how you fold the laundry. She doesn't like where you park the car in the garage. And then. But, hey, at least we got a really nice house. At least we got a spacious place to live in. Or the other option is that you live on the corner of a rooftop. Or just like in a desert land. And it seems like without any family, no spouse, no house, nothing like that. I like John Gill, the way that he talks about the one living on a rooftop. Well, by the way, the roofs back then were flat at the top, you know, so people would go out there like and sleep during the day or whatever, sometimes during the siesta. But John Gill says this: it is better to be in the corner of such a roof alone and be exposed to scorching heat, to blustering winds, to thunderstorms and showers of rain, than with a brawling woman in a wide house. You know what you'd be better off being? Homeless in a cardboard box than sharing a house with a quarrelsome spouse. But maybe another part of this scenario is, yeah, but this person that I want to live with, this person that I want to be with, I mean, she's really beautiful, or he's really handsome. He's got a six-pack, and those are the six reasons that I want to be with him. And so, like, because he's got all these great things going for him, like, I can look past some of these things that cause us to always be fighting and quarreling about one thing after another. You know what's going to happen is, if you look past the quarrelsomeness of somebody and you're really attracted to this particular thing about their body or whatever it might be, is you're going to grow to despise those parts of them. Because the quarreling is just going to make you just wish you lived in a desert. Proverbs 31 verse 30 says, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. You know, since COVID and people being locked in, how strong of an emotion loneliness is. Of all the reasons, and you guys have probably heard me say this before, but of all the reasons that I've seen young people fall away, it's out of pursuit for a spouse. They get lonely. They really want to be with somebody, and they had standards of looking for somebody that was going to help them become more godly, and then the feelings of loneliness get to them, and they start to lower their standards more and more and more. Do you know what you'd be better off doing? than lowering your standards and ending up possibly with somebody that's going to be quarrelsome, especially about your faith, is it would be better to just be alone a little bit longer. Notice the next category of better than scenarios in social life. Would you rather receive rebuke or coddling? Look at Proverbs chapter 27, verses 5 and 6. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy. Would you rather have somebody fawn all over you and tell you how great you are constantly, or somebody say, look, this is what's going on and you need to know these things? Now, it's taken for granted in this text that the rebuke would be coming from somebody who's wise and is actually perceptive to the things that need to be said. But here's a question to ask about this. Who is this better for? Is it better for the giver of the rebuke or the receiver of the rebuke? And I think the answer to that is that it would be both. Do you need to rebuke anybody about anything? It would be better for you to say what needs to be said than to not say it at all, or to lie to the person and give them all kinds of praise. Do you know why it would be better for you to go ahead and say what needs to be said? He says, better is open rebuke than hidden love. What is hidden love? Well, I've got this loving concern for this person, but because of my cowardice, or because I'm afraid that they're going to look down on me if I say this kind of thing or whatever, I'm just not going to say anything to risk it at all. And it would be better for you to manifest your love for somebody by telling them the things that need to be said and risking that this person might not want to be around me anymore. So it's better to be the giver of it. And I understand that there's the timing matters, love matters, and all those kinds of things. But sometimes we say those things to justify never saying anything. But what about being the receiver? Do you know why it's better to hear rebuke from a wise person than to just have people praise you all the time in an empty way? It's because it provides an opportunity to actually grow. And the way that you respond to rebuke says a lot about your wisdom and your fear of the Lord. You know what we can sometimes do? Do you remember, wasn't it Ahab in 1 Kings that had Micaiah the prophet, and he kept him in prison, and he would bring him out whenever there was a question about something? Do you have anybody who's like that in your life, where you kind of keep them locked up and you know that they'll tell you the truth, and it's really when you hit rock bottom in some way or another, or there's some really tense situation, where you finally trot that person out and say, okay, tell me what you think about this, that, or the other thing? Do you ever just avoid the people, though, that are going to tell you the truth? You just go ahead and go to all the people that are going to tell you how great you are. And this passage is saying you'd be better off going to that person in bravery and courage and letting them tell you what you really need to hear, rather than going to all the people that are going to tell you all the things you want to hear. You know how sometimes we respond, though, to somebody who rebukes us? Is we assassinate their character. Well, that person's younger than me, so they don't know. Or that person's older than me, and so they're out of touch with reality. Or I don't like the tone of voice that they used, or whatever. And as soon as we start assassinating somebody's character, we're not dealing with the substance of what was said. Do you know what would be better for you? Is to just listen humbly to the things that people have to say and assess whether or not this is something that you need to hear. How about being real or being fake? Proverbs chapter 12, verse 9, better to be lonely and have a servant than to play the great man and lack bread. When Samantha and I were dating and I was in college between semesters of junior and senior year, there was this little church that I had preached at for 2 years. And Samantha lived in a trailer park with eight people living in one trailer. And they were most of the people that made up like the 10 members of the church. And in the trailer park, there was a lot of people that had really souped up cars. And if those people were driving around town, you'd think, well, those people must live in a mansion or something like that. And then if you were to follow those people back home, you go, oh, you live in a trailer. like almost as if we want to present to people, and I don't know what was going on in the hearts of those people. I'm not judging that in that sense, but it's just kind of, it's ironic that you present yourself outside of your home as if I've got all these really nice things. Do you get really concerned about having the appearance of being a great person with lots of wealth, and look at the designer things that I have, and look at the logos on my shirts so you can all see all the things that I have? Are you really concerned with that kind of thing? Do you realize that there's some people that spend so much money on that kind of stuff that they're not even investing in the things that matter the most? In fact, in this passage, I think hyperbolically, they lack bread. Would you rather just be a real person, or try to present to everybody this thing that you think will be impressive to people? I like what one person said about this. The one who exalts self pretends to be wealthy to command honor, but they lack bread. That lacking bread shows that the honor is feigned. In reality, the self-exalting person is starving. Petty people unwisely spend their sparse resources to keep up vain appearances. Their slavery to human opinion dooms them to shame. Are you obsessed with what people think about you? Trying to impress people with all these things that you've gone into hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt to have so that people can just notice you go, oh yeah, that's what I wanted. Would you rather just be a real person that maybe doesn't have all the impressive things, or just keep up the appearances? Notice the last one. Would you rather be exalted or presume upon yourself that you ought to be exalted? Proverbs 25, verses 6 and 7 say, "Do not put yourself forward in the king's presence or stand in the place of the great, for it is better to be told, 'Come up here,' than to be put lower in the presence of a noble." I feel like there's so many things moving so quickly in our culture right now that I've been out of college for several years, and the way that some people talk about certain things, I'm like, oh, okay, what does that even mean? So one thing that I had to look up this last week was telling yourself positive affirmations. I didn't know what this term meant. And so I found a video on the YouTubes, because that's what the young people do these days, on YouTube, and it was a 15-minute video of positive affirmations that you're supposed to tell yourself. And I listened to part of this, and here's what part of the positive affirmation said. So you should, if you tell yourself this every morning and every night, then this is where it's at. All right, here it is. I love to embrace all of me. Can you say it? I love to embrace all of me, even the sinful parts. I am radiant. Say it. I am radiant. I am confident in myself and my worth. I believe in myself. I trust myself. I shine brightest when I am my true self. All of me is beautiful. I am worthy. You're supposed to say all this garbage to yourself. Do you see how similar this is to in this proverb? Do not put yourself forward in the king's presence. You know, I think I'm great, and I'm going to crush this job interview. And when I get into that job, I'm going to be the person that gets all of the what are those things when you move forward in your job? What are they called? A what? A promotion. I'm going to get all the promotions, and I'm just going to get. Well, okay. How about this? You're not the one making those decisions. And so you can have all of these positive affirmations all day long, but at the end of the day, you are still beholden to what other people are going to judge about you. So you can say all the things that you want and presume upon yourself that, yes, I will get this and I will get that. And you're setting yourself up to be crushed. Now, I'm not saying that the opposite is that you're supposed to tell yourself you're a loser, you're a failure, you're an idiot, you're a good for nothing. Do you know what the problem with both of these things would be? To watch these self-affirmation videos as opposed to talking about how much of a loser you are all day. You know what the problem with both things are? Is you're obsessed with yourself. And that's what the Bible calls pride. You know what would be better? Rather than presuming that, you know, I'm just going to put myself forward, I'm going to have the best, you know, I'm just going to take those things. And well, you could set yourself up into a position where you get demoted. And you've talked about how great you are, and then something bad happens and all of that gets taken away. It would be better for you to just quietly do your job. And then if somebody notices, say, hey, come up here, be exalted in this way, be recognized for that. Let somebody else sing your praise, not yourself. Proverbs 27, verse 2. But do you see that this is the same model and pattern of Jesus? In Philippians 2, 8, and 9, and being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God has highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name that is above every name. Jesus humbled himself, and God exalted him. You know what the pattern is for us is that we humble ourselves. We don't try to sell ourselves to the world. We quietly do our work. We empty ourselves. And then one day, the praise that we're looking for is going to come from the Father when he says, "Well done, good and faithful servant." How spiritually minded are you? And maybe as we were looking at some of these things, you were thinking every time, well, I'm the exception. I'm the exception. I'm the exception. I can have the best of both worlds in every scenario, to which I would say that you're probably blinded. Why else would Solomon be writing these things as if it's one or the other? Yeah, there's sometimes there's exceptions. But how spiritually minded are you? Would you really rather receive the rebuke? Would you really rather empty yourself now and wait to be exalted later? Would you really pick these scenarios? Are you picking these scenarios? I know that this lesson is a little bit different from the kinds of things that we normally look at. To this point, since being here, we haven't just pulled out a theme in Proverbs and looked at that together. I hope that these thoughts have been helpful to us and help us think whether or not we're trying to serve God above everything else, or if our minds are fixated on things in this life that'll ultimately leave us crushed and broken anyways. We're about to sing the song, "How Deep the Father's Love." Is the love of the Father the thing that is that the praise that ultimately means everything to you? Or are you looking at it from the eyes of people? Does anybody here tonight that needs to get their life right with God, if they need to become more spiritually minded and spiritually focused, this is an opportunity to get your life right while we stand and while we sing.